Good morning, everyone. My name is Austin Smith, and I want to welcome you to Poets Table, a show where I spend a half hour talking about one of my favorite poets, who I hope will become one of your favorite poets. And this morning, I'm excited to talk about a great poet named James Wright. James Wright was born in Martins Ferry, Ohio, and he spent his childhood in this part, kind of southeastern Ohio, sort of Appalachia, not too far from the border of West Virginia. His father worked in a glass factory, and he really came up in the working class in that kind of southeastern Ohio, Appalachia world of the mid 20th century. And he was actually a very I think that you could say he tried to escape his roots a little bit. He wrote very beautifully about Ohio, but would go on to kind of try to escape some of the darkness that he found there. I think he writes in a very complicated way about growing up in a difficult place and his attempts to find some lightness and levity in his life. It's one of the themes of his work, especially later in his career. So we're going to talk today about two poems that are very, I think, pretty rooted in the Midwest. Maybe if we have time, we can look at a poem from later in his career when he spent a lot more time living in New York City and then actually at the very end of his life, some time in Italy. So his whole career was kind of an attempt to shrug off some of the darkness of that, again, difficult kind of childhood in southeastern Ohio and find something a little lighter. And so that's James Wright in a nutshell. You could say that James Wright was one of the founders of a literary movement that we called the Deep Image movement in poetry. Deep imagery being imagery that might come from like dreams or from the subconscious. There's a lot of very archetypal language in his poetry, shadows and stones and things of that nature. And so you could almost, I think his poems are almost symbolic, and they have they're very specific, as I'm going to share with you. The first poem that I'm going to share is called Autumn Begins in Martins Ferry, Ohio. So it's a poem that's, you know, very much located in Wright's childhood town. But there's also something very universal about his work, again, using those archetypal images of stones and shadows and bones and things like that, really kind of allow him to be a poet of universal import. And his favorite poets were poets like a great German poet named George Trakl, who James Wright translated. He also was very interested in poets from Italy and France and South America. He was a very big fan of poets like Federico Garcia Lorca and Pablo Neruda. And Wright did a lot of work in terms of translating poets from other languages too. And I think that this was a very, very formative and fruitful thing for him in his own work. So that just gives you a little bit of a sense of who James Wright was. Just to go briefly again to his biography, born in Ohio, ended up teaching at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis, ended up also teaching in New York City. He suffered from depression and alcoholism for much of his life, but he triumphed over those difficult diseases. And at the end of his life, he was sober. And he actually, as I said earlier, I think achieved a kind of peace in his life and in his writing. So the first poem I'm going to share, Autumn Begins in Martins Ferry, Ohio, I wanted to share because it's a great, probably one of the great football poems ever written. And it's actually one of, I think, the great poems, period. But it's a poem that celebrates both the beauty and the violence of football. And because it's football season, I thought it'd be appropriate to share this one. So again, it's called Autumn Begins in Martins Ferry, Ohio by James Wright. In the Shreve High football stadium, I think of Pollocks nursing long bears in Tiltonsville, and gray faces of Negroes in the blast furnace at Benwood, and the ruptured night watchmen of Wheeling Steel dreaming of heroes. All the proud fathers are ashamed to go home. Their women cluck like starved pullets, dying for love. Therefore, their sons grow suicidally beautiful at the beginning of October and gallop terribly against each other's bodies. So that's the poem. I can read it again because it's short, and I think it begs a hearing again. And you can find this poem very easily online. A quick search will bring you to Autumn Begins in Martins Ferry, Ohio by James Wright. In the Shreve High football stadium, I think of Pollocks nursing long bears in Tiltonsville, and gray faces of Negroes in the blast furnace at Benwood, and the ruptured night watchmen of Wheeling Steel dreaming of heroes. All the proud fathers are ashamed to go home. Their women cluck like starved pullets, dying for love. Therefore, their sons grow suicidally beautiful at the beginning of October and gallop terribly against each other's bodies. So just to kind of, we can walk through the poem. I think we can almost just kind of pare it down a little bit. The poet is in the football stadium of Shreve High School, thinking of these various, ethnic groups that might have, resided in southeastern Ohio. So Pollocks, Polish workers nursing long beers at a tavern in a town called Tiltonsville. The gray faces of black men in a furnace, so some kind of, forge in Benwood. A ruptured night watchman, which is a very, very strange word, right? Ruptured. What does that mean to be ruptured? I guess broken, maybe physically, but also emotionally. The night watchman at Wheeling Steel. All three of these characters, the Pollocks nursing long beers, the black men in the forge, and the night watchman at the steel factory, are dreaming of heroes. They've maybe kind of, grown beyond the time where they might believe themselves to be heroes. They've entered into their careers and they're working class people. So that's where the poet kind of starts. He's thinking about these various men who we assume are kind of looking back on a time that they might have wanted to be more than what they are. He says, all the proud fathers are ashamed to go home. So maybe these men are ashamed to go home. They're not quite as heroic as they maybe wanted to be. Their wives cluck like starved pullets. Pullet is a kind of chicken or a hen. And so this idea of the proud fathers and the women clucking, dying for love, just shows like a kind of, a domestic situation that is kind of sad and just a feeling of insufficiency. And then the poet says, therefore, as if because of these things, because of the disappointed men and the women who are dying for love at home, because of these things, their sons grow suicidally beautiful at the beginning of October and gallop terribly against each other's bodies. So it's almost as if because of the sorrow of their home lives, because of the fact that their fathers are drinking and working at a forge and walking the night shift at Wheeling Steel, and because their mothers are so sad, because the fathers are too ashamed to go home, because of all these things, their sons grow suicidally beautiful, which is just a very strange. I don't think that we expect that word suicidally to precede the word beautiful. But their sons, at the beginning of October at football season, throw one another at one another, gallop terribly against each other's bodies, out of maybe this idea of frustration or some kind of sorrow that can't really be conveyed in any way that's not physical, right? So I think we've all experienced this where you see kids kind of taking out some kind of emotional toll on one another in a physical way. I think that there's a lot of that in sports, particularly high school sports. So what James Wright has done here is kind of explained a whole community's sorrow via this sport that, of course, in the Midwest we love, but is also very complicated. I think it's a poem about not being able to convey our emotions and so having to find a conduit for deeper feelings. You know, and I think that any of these sons who are galloping terribly against each other's bodies could very well become poets themselves. And we have here just a wonderful celebration of this autumnal ritual in the Midwest. And every time I see the leaves change, I think about this poem and I kind of take it out and I consider it again. It's one of those poems that sticks with you, I think, especially if you're from the Midwest. And I really admire the poem, and I think that James Wright was brave in writing it. It's a poem about sorrow that somehow transcends sorrow to me. It's a dark poem, but it feels in the end somehow triumphant, which I, as I said earlier, talking about James Wright's career as a whole, was true of his entire life as a poet. So maybe it's a good transition point now to take up another poem by James Wright. This one's called A Blessing. You'll notice at the beginning of this poem, he also, it's not in the title, but it's in the first line. He's very interested, I think, in placing his poems in a specific location. And there are many town names and place names in James Wright's poems. So in the previous poem, we had, of course, Martin's Ferry, Tiltonsville, Benwood, Wheeling. So we basically have this litany of places, and that's why I think oftentimes people talk about James Wright as being a place-based poet. And even though he, as I said earlier, lived in New York City and in even in Italy, people always associate him with the Midwest and with Ohio particularly. But A Blessing takes place actually in Minnesota. So I'm going to read the poem. I'll probably read it twice, and then we can talk about it. A Blessing. Just off the highway to Rochester, Minnesota, twilight bounds softly forth on the grass, and the eyes of those two Indian ponies darken with kindness. They have come gladly out of the willows to welcome my friend and me. We step over the barbed wire into the pasture, where they have been grazing all day alone. They ripple tensely. They can hardly contain their happiness that we have come. They bow shyly as wet swans. They love each other. There is no loneliness like theirs. At home once more, they begin munching the young tufts of spring in the darkness. I would like to hold the slenderer one in my arms, for she has walked over to me and nuzzled my left hand. She is black and white, her mane falls wild on her forehead, and the light breeze moves me to caress her long ear that is delicate as the skin over a girl's wrist. Suddenly, I realize that if I stepped out of my body, I would break into blossom. I think I'll read it one more time. And this is another poem that you can find quite easily online. And again, it's called A Blessing by James Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T. Just off the highway to Rochester, Minnesota, twilight bounds softly forth on the grass, and the eyes of those two Indian ponies darken with kindness. They have come gladly out of the willows to welcome my friend and me. We step over the barbed wire into the pasture where they have been grazing all day alone. They ripple tensely. They can hardly contain their happiness that we have come. They bow shyly as wet swans. They love each other. There is no loneliness like theirs. At home once more, they begin munching the young tufts of spring in the darkness. I would like to hold the slenderer one in my arms, for she has walked over to me and nuzzled my left hand. She is black and white. Her mane falls wild on her forehead, and the light breeze moves me to caress her long ear that is delicate as the skin over a girl's wrist. Suddenly I realize that if I stepped out of my body, I would break into blossom. So there's a lot to say about this poem. I think the first thing is that it's a poem of an encounter with the poet with these two horses. who come out of the willows gladly to welcome the poet and his friend. There's a lot about loneliness. You know, where they have been grazing all day alone. There is no loneliness like theirs. There's a feeling of kind of maybe intrusion, like the poet has kind of intruded upon a very, very quiet and solemn place in this pasture. There's basically, I think, a transmutation of the peacefulness of the ponies has kind of, I don't know, bled into the poet in some way. The poet and his friend are kind of a mirror image of the two ponies, and it's almost like they learn something from the ponies by visiting them. The ponies love each other. There is no loneliness like theirs. Her mane falls wild on her forehead. Her long ear is delicate as the skin over a girl's wrist. And there's just all of this beauty that is found off the highway. There's a sense that, and the poem is called A Blessing, of course, so it's almost like the poet has recognized that there are moments in life that are given to us like a gift. And this encounter of these two ponies is one of those moments. It's one of the poet's blessings. And I want to talk particularly about the very end of the poem, because this is a very, very famous end of an American poem. I think it's probably one of the poems that people talk about when they're talking about amazing endings or surprising endings and surprising line breaks. So the last three lines of the poem, and I'll just snap when I reach the end of the lines, go, "Suddenly I realize that if I stepped out of my body, I would break into blossom." So this idea that, you know, when we break is oftentimes conceived of as a negative thing. One was whole and then they're broken. But of course, we can talk about breaking into song or breaking into blossom as well as breaking into pieces. So the poet, by using this radical line break, saying that if I stepped out of my body, I would break, and leaving us that moment of pause where we don't know what they're going to break into, I think replicates this moment where they are about to break into blossom. They're about to maybe leave their earthly identity in a way and become something very different. It's a moment where the poet almost catches themselves right before transition or transformation, saying, "Suddenly I realized if I stepped out of my body, I would break into blossom." Again, we've had a poet who has touched these horses and has kind of had this experience. They've broken some boundaries already, right? So they've been on the highway. They climb over the barbed wire fence. They enter the pasture. They touch the horses. And it's like there's one more step to be taken. That would be to leave the body itself, to kind of become pure spirit. And if the poet realizes, if I were to do so, I would break into blossom. And we might ask, well, why not go ahead and do that then? Why not just take that last step, right? But I think that the poem kind of leaves us at that threshold, which is beautiful. So it's a great poem about, I guess, having a kind of ethereal, otherworldly experience with a creature or creatures on earth, and feeling maybe that one has almost sloughed off or shed their old identity for a new identity. And so it's a really amazing poem about transformation. So that's A Blessing by James Wright. And it's a little lighter of a poem than Autumn Begins in Martins Ferry, Ohio. I'm gonna read one last poem by Wright, which is called, it's another poem that actually locates itself in a particular place. And this is also a poem that takes place in Minnesota. And this poem also has a very famous ending. And it's called Lying in a Hammock at William Duffy's Farm in Pine Island, Minnesota. Over my head, I see the bronze butterfly asleep on the black trunk, blowing like a leaf in green shadow. Down the ravine behind the empty house, the cowbells follow one another into the distances of the afternoon. To my right, in a field of sunlight between two pines, the droppings of last year's horses blaze up into golden stones. I lean back as the evening darkens and comes on. A chicken hawk floats over, looking for home. I have wasted my life. I'll just read it one more time. Again, this is Lying in a Hammock at William Duffy's Farm in Pine Island, Minnesota, by James Wright. Over my head, I see the bronze butterfly asleep on the black trunk, blowing like a leaf in green shadow. Down the ravine behind the empty house, the cowbells follow one another into the distances of the afternoon. To my right, in a field of sunlight between two pines, the droppings of last year's horses blaze up into golden stones. I lean back as the evening darkens and comes on. A chicken hawk floats over, looking for home. I have wasted my life. So this is a poem that I think contradicts itself, and I think it's one of the reasons that the poem is so complicated and interesting. That last line is surprising, right? We've been reading a poem that is very descriptive and very visual, and we have all these images in the poem. There's a bronze butterfly asleep on a black trunk. There's a green shadow. So that's all visual language, right? There's also the cowbells following one another into the distances of the afternoon, which is auditory. There's this field of sunlight between two pines. There's even horse manure that blazes up into golden stones. So even the manure it's kind of an apotheosis into something golden and precious. The poet leans back as the evening darkens and comes on. A chicken hawk floats over looking for home. I have wasted my life, the poet says. And it really begs the question, have you wasted your life? Or is this actually exactly what the poet should be doing, lying in this hammock, right? Observing the world, noting down all of these little moments that others who aren't lying in the hammock might easily pass by. I think it's another poem, it's not that dissimilar from the poem I read previously, A Blessing, in that it's a poem about the poet taking a moment, you know, either to get out of a car and go visit two horses or just lying in a hammock and observing the world and kind of notating it, taking it down, taking note of the world as it appears to the poet. And James Wright isn't really doing a whole lot here aside from describing what he hears and sees. He doesn't even really talk very much about how he feels. There's longing in the poem. You know, there's the cowbells following one another into the distances of the afternoon. There's an empty house. There's the chicken hawk looking for home. So there are these things that seem to be kind of trying to find their place. And then the poet has this concluding line, I have wasted my life. It's actually probably in conversation with a very famous poem by the poet Rainer Maria Rilke, which ends, you must change your life. And I think that James Wright might have been maybe responding to that that demand that the poet Rilke makes upon the reader, you must change your life. Here James Wright is saying, I have wasted my life. It just raises the question, what is a life well lived or a life wasted? What do those lives look like? For the poet, I think, you know, lying in this hammock, having a kind of meditative period where they are letting the world come to them rather than going out into the world, being passive and receptive, it actually leads to this poem. And the poem would not have been had it not been for this receptive, literal posture that the poet takes towards the world, lying in a hammock. It also has something to do, I think, with the purpose of the poet's vocation. Is the poet really supposed to be out there making poems, like seeking them out, hunting them down, like the chicken hawk is floating over the field looking for prey? Or is the poet's role to be more retiring and kind of literally like letting the world come to them? I think that there's something almost instructive about this poem. I think that you could share it with someone who says that you should get up and be more active, or take a little bit more initiative in your life. You could show them this poem and say, actually, James Wright has this other approach to being alive, which is to let the world come to us. And I think in general, that's one of the things I wanted to share about James Wright today, is his receptivity to the world. And, for someone who had suffered so much from depression and really struggled, I think, in periods of his life with feeling powerless, there's something really beautiful about finding that there's value even in his powerlessness. And there's a humbleness to James Wright's work that is really, really lovely. And he almost empties himself and allows the poem to fill himself, like he's a vessel of some sort. So I just wanted to share with you these three poems today. I think that they're very autumnal, particularly the first poem I shared about football, but there's something autumnal about them, and it seems like there are certain seasons that just that for some reason make me think of certain poets, and I always think of James Wright in the fall. So hence our half hour this morning with, again, the great Ohio poet James Wright. The poems I shared by him, just to recap, were Autumn Begins in Martins Ferry, Ohio. The second was A Blessing. The third was Lying in a Hammock at William Duffy's Farm in Pine Island, Minnesota. And as I will often try to do, read poems that are available to you online so that you can read them yourselves. Especially with James Wright, I think it's important to see where he breaks his lines and how he lays the poem out on the page. So all three of these poems are available at the Poetry Foundation website, which is poetryfoundation.org. So I want to thank you again for spending some time on your Friday morning with me, Austin Smith, on this show, Poets Table, which you can only hear on WDRT out of Viroqua. And I don't know who I'll share next week, but it's always exciting to think up the next favorite poet of mine to share with you. And I, again, very much appreciate you spending this portion of your Friday morning with me. So I hope you have a good weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.